Welcome to the Udacity Thought Leader Series podcast. Today, our guest is Dr. Fei-Fei Li, co-director of Stanford University's Human-Centered AI Institute and the Stanford Vision and Learning Lab. Join us as Udacity founder Sebastian Thrun and Dr. Li discuss how AI is changing, the key principles of human-centered AI, and what it means for key industries including healthcare, manufacturing, and education.
Well, hi, everybody. My name is Sebastian. I'm the founder of Udacity, and I have with me a really, really good friend and colleague from Stanford University, Professor Fei-Fei Li.
Hi, I'm Fei-Fei.
Fei-Fei joined Stanford about 10 years ago.
Yes, good memory.
Yes, and I was involved in recruiting her from Princeton.
Many
and
phone
I would
calls
say
from you.
This is possibly the best thing I ever did at Stanford, to get Fei-Fei Li into Stanford. She's now a distinguished chaired professor. She has the Sequoia Chair. She's also a co-director of the Human-Centered AI Institute. And she just won the 10-year award for the most important past paper in computer vision for building a massive data set that has propelled the field more than almost anything else. So it's a great honor to know you.
The honor is mine. I was just saying that how wonderful it is. It was coming to Stanford AI Lab when you were still the director.
It's a long time ago.
And I followed your footsteps.
Good. Let's talk about artificial intelligence, because you're so at the pulse of it. You've seen it from the academic side, and you've seen it from the industry side. How do you feel from the academic side? What's different?
So for those of us, you included, Sebastian, we entered AI during what people call AI winter time, right? So I remembered I started my PhD study in AI in the year of 2000, where the public hasn't even heard of this word, but it was purely an intellectual curiosity for myself to get into this field. Well, 20 years later, 19 years later, it is an absolutely complete change. The field has gone from academic niche tucked in underneath computer science discipline into a vast field of many different subfields, as well as just its impact. So whether you are in academia or in industry, you've got to feel this. It's it's just a unique time now.
So for a long time, you worked on making computers smart in their ability to see the world, right? Mm-hmm. Computer vision, as it's called. And then at some point, you flipped over and said, no, we're going to now work on human-centered AI. What happened?
Right. And I think that's a continuum. It's definitely not a flip over. So what happens is that, you know, my academic research area is still the intersection between machine learning, deep learning, and computer vision. But around the time, 2015, I give a TED Talk.
Which I attended.
Yes, yeah,
and
that's
talk.
A couple of years after your TED Talk. just sharing with the world that there is a change coming in the technology of computer vision. And during that TED Talk, I talk about the potential applications. But I don't think many of us predicted how fast that change start to come to industry. So 2017, 2018, I took a sabbatical from Stanford and was working as the chief scientist of AI at Google Cloud, where I was overseeing the enterprise AI R&D products and business solutions. And one of the biggest things I learned there, and it continues to illuminate me till today, is how much AI is transforming businesses, and it's touching everyone's life, and it will be in such a profound way. Sometimes we don't feel it, but it's there, whether you're shopping online or going through healthcare system and thinking about diagnosis and medication and treatment or transportation or anything. So with that in mind, I think it really dawned on me around 2017 that this is a technology that is about humans, that there's no independent value of AI. AI's value should be human values. And when that dawned on me, I started to develop a new framework in my mind about how we should advance AI and deploy AI in the future, and it should be under a human-centered framework.
You say AI is about human values. Do you believe an AI system has to have values?
I don't think technology has independent values. I think from the design, development to deployment, the technology carry our values.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, some people say AI will just eradicate all jobs. That's like Sam Altman's, I guess, perspective. Where on that spectrum do you end up?
So, you know, Silicon Valley, many of us probably believe that the best way to predict the future is to create the future, right?
Yep.
So I really believe this technology, like many technology, has bigger potential to enhance humans and augment humans rather than replace humans. And this is a little bit, it's more than a little bit, it's on us, is how we want to design this. But I want to give you a concrete example. For the past 8 years, I've been working in healthcare. So Sebastian, you're a pioneer in self-driving car. I remember when I joined Stanford, Stanley was still at Stanford, right? So, you went to Google and start paving the way to show the world the combination of smart sensors that has a holistic view of the world and the environment, plus powerful algorithms behind these data, sense data, can help make critical decisions and assist mobility. The same thing is going to happen in healthcare, and that's my example of how we can be assistive of healthcare delivery. Our clinicians, Americans' clinicians, whether we're talking about nurses and doctors, are overworked, overwhelmed, and the amount of physician and nurse attrition and dropout rate is all-time high. In the meantime, our patients are not getting enough care in their treatment. We have huge error rate in medical delivery that's killing people. I don't know if you know that just hospital-acquired infection, which is the number 3 or 2, depending on the measure, killer of American patients in hospital, claims more lives, almost 3 times more lives than car accidents per year in our country. And now what can we do? It's a very difficult problem to ensure the kind of healthcare delivery quality under certain, you know, controlled cost. Well, sensors, smart sensors and computer vision can come to help. We've been collaborating with Stanford Children's Hospital and Utah's Intermountain Hospital to put cheap sensors around the hospital ward and help to monitor clinicians' hand hygiene practice. And that is a critical component of controlling hospital-acquired infection and pioneering and designing a system to remind the doctors or nurses when they need to wash their hands before they touch the patients. And that's just one tiny example. We are also doing work in ICUs to help monitor patients' mobility. While moving patients in clinically safe way helps their recovery, there are also unsafe moments when patients are delirious and so on. And we put sensors to help continuously monitor the situation of patients. So these are examples that AI is there to augment and to enhance the service we can do for people, not to replace people.
So lay out for me, this is super interesting, lay out to me the future of 20, 30, 50 years in medicine. What do you think AI will do to medicine in general or to health services?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of exciting changes coming, and one of my good friends, Eric Topol, has written a very interesting book called Deep Medicine that shows AI's potential impact. And I think there's several areas. One is that with the digitization of EMR, EHR, electronic hospital record, and electronic medical record, there is a lot of opportunity to take those kind of data analytics to help move from posterior treatment to predictive help to our patients. Also, because of the huge throughput of data collected in medicine these days, whether it's radiology or pathology and other physiological data, we are looking at AI's help in diagnosis, in treatment plan, in democratizing and making this cheaper and more accessible to different parts of the global population. It's heartbreaking to know that while in Silicon Valley we have the access to the best technology in medicine and many parts of this country as well as the world, people are still having a hard time accessing doctors and healthcare. And hopefully AI can help with that. And last but not the least, I think healthcare. I personally focus on the verb care in healthcare. So whether we're talking about this huge uptick in aging population or talking about just caring for patients inpatient or in homes and rehabilitation and all that, AI can come to help as whether it's a guardian angel or ambient intelligence or assistive technology.
So tell me about yourself. I mean, you started out your career at Princeton.
Yes.
You moved over to Caltech for your master's and your PhD. Went back to Princeton. You obviously did it as a minority in an environment.
In CS.
In computer science. We're not that many women were around at the time, and neither are today. What were your struggles? What did you learn? What were the moments that defined you?
Good question, Sebastian. So I started as a physics major in Princeton, and a lot of students ask me how early should they start computer science, and my answer is you should start knowing what your passion is and pursue that as early as you can, but it doesn't have to be computer science. Many paths lead to AI, for example, and I want to talk a little bit later about why I see AI as an interdisciplinary field later. So I was extremely interested in the mystery of the universe and the origin of the universe, the distant galaxies and the subatomic particles, till I started reading books about great physicists in the 20th century like Einstein and Schrodinger, and noticed that their own interest in the later part of their life shifted from the atomic world to the human biological world. There's more questions and mysteries about life itself. And then I get particularly interested in intelligence. And that's how I decided my PhD will be on simultaneously human cognitive neuroscience as well as AI. At that time, we don't call it AI. We call it computer vision and machine learning.
Right.
And an early struggle as a grad student is actually traversing that interdisciplinary research, because I was simultaneously doing work in neuroscience and in AI, and it's easy to fall through the crack, right?
Yes.
You know that you have to be doing impactful work in both fields, but also combine them in interesting ways. And I feel lucky that I had amazing environment at Caltech, Christoph Koch, Pietro Perona. These are my advisors who work with me closely on this work. And then I went to Princeton as an assistant professor. I think there one of the struggle is really believing wanting to do something impactful, but have that grit to carry it through when the world doesn't believe that. And that happened to the ImageNet project, where we saw very early in 2006 that machine learning was stuck in a local minimum because we're all fiddling with these parameters of a small Bayesian network model, while we might have to think entirely differently thinking about data-driven machine learning and how that can reboot the way we can train computer algorithms. But that mindset or that idea is not exactly mainstream at that time, and especially wanting to demonstrate that on a data set crazily huge. We were downloading billions of images from the internet and wanting to put together the world's largest data set of everything. It's tens of thousands of object classes and millions, tens of millions of images. And that process was kind of scary inside, you know, that much effort. But luckily, we succeeded.
I mean, it feels like from today's perspective, we would not be anywhere close in AI without that work that you did back in the day.
Well, thank you.
I can commiserate that at the time. I think people loved publishing algorithms and they didn't love publishing data sets.
Yeah.
So how do you kept yourself motivated doing this?
Well, you see in the horizon or even beyond the horizon, the eventual goal, right? We were very clear, my student and I, we somehow had a very clear vision. This is not about data set. This is about rebooting AI algorithms. And with that kind of goal on the horizon, you have to just be resilient. I was saying earlier, the same thing is happening in our healthcare research, that we see that importance of ambient intelligence in helping healthcare delivery and be assistive. But to get all the proper legal approval, IRB approval, specking out the right sensors, getting the hospital to just put a screw on those sensors and hang it on the wall. And that process takes years, and it's the resilience that researchers have to have, or entrepreneurs have to have to get true. Something done.
Let's talk about human-centered AI. Obviously, you started this together with John Enchimendi,
yes.
Former provost and a logic expert from humanities.
Yes, philosopher.
Philosopher. What's wrong about AI? Why do you need this center? What is it good for?
That's a great question. When we started this, we were not thinking about what's wrong with AI, but I want to say what's changed in AI. AI is a field is more or less 60 years old, and I think it has come to a phase change. I fundamentally believe AI is no longer a computer science discipline. It's an interdisciplinary field. And when I say interdisciplinary, I don't mean just two engineering fields. I mean it's a very wide, you know, field of study that should include humanities and social sciences. So let me lay out the three founding principles mm-hmm. of human-centered AI framework that at Stanford our institute is built on and we believe in. The first principle is betting on the future of AI technology should be more human-inspired. And here I'm inviting the cross-pollination of brain science, neuroscience, cognitive science with AI. So whether we're looking at the deep, algorithm level, new learning rules, or we're talking about the cognitively inspired new tasks, it's a spectrum of possibilities to drive the next generation AI technology to be human inspired. That's the first principle. This requires our students to be versed in a larger set of, understanding of cognition or neuroscience or applied physics in addition to computer science. Second AI principle, or second human-centered AI principle, is to rethink AI as a humanities and social science field, not just computer science field. Here we're inviting thinkers and students to study economics, study history, study law, study ethics, study political science in the context of AI, so that we can answer questions like future of work, like machine learning fairness and bias, like ethical codes of AI, like geopolitical implications of AI, and all these social and human impact. And the goal here is that we want to understand and anticipate AI's impact. And hopefully Stanford also has an aspiration to become a partner to policymakers, to recommend thoughtful policies of, you know, how AI will impact our life. Third, which is our last principle, but not the least, is goes back to what we talked about earlier, Sebastian, is we want to change a verb. The verb that's associated with AI today is replace. But we really believe the opportunity and potential and the more resources should put in designing, developing, and deploying human-centered AI technology that augments and enhances humans, not to replace humans. And here, Stanford is particularly passionate about fields like education, mm-hmm. healthcare, automation and manufacturing, and sustainability. Mm-hmm. So these are the three founding principles that we want to instill here at Stanford to reboot AI into an interdisciplinary field where we'll have classes that for students that are cross departments and schools. For example, one of the most popular classes that was offered just this past quarter was a technology ethics class co-taught by a political science and philosophy professor, a computer science professor, and students come all over the campus to take that class. Nice. I also taught a class last quarter with a behavioral psychologist from the business school on AI and human well-being, thinking about how to design from a business and application point of view, technology that enhances human dignity and well-being. So nice. These are the new changes we want to see.
Nice. Last question. You happen to be very successfully married to one of your colleagues in computer vision. What are your dinner conversations like?
We still have young kids, so you can imagine is eat your vegetable. But, my husband, Silvio Savarese, is a roboticist. So we are very excited by, I'm also personally very excited by the future of AI and robotics. So we talk a lot about this. But truthfully, we have a lot of normal family conversation.
Good. Well, Feifei, it's great to have you here.
And thank you, Sebastian.
Everyone who watches this enjoys.
Thank
She's
you.
By far one of the smartest people I've ever met. And
the feeling is mutual.
Honestly, when we interviewed her, I'm a little bit older than she is, obviously, she gave the best answer to the question, how to shape your research into world impact. Which
thank
is something
you.
That many academics don't know how to answer. Feifei, great having you over.
Thank you, Sebastian.